Well, I've spent a lot of time on soccer sidelines, not so much anymore, but a lot of years on soccer sidelines. And when you sit there with a lot of the same people, you see them, you begin to, let's say, I invite them into conversation. My wife says, you force people into conversation. But I think of it as inviting them in a conversation. So you get to learn about some people. And one day I was on the sideline and one of my neighbors in my neighborhood was bringing a kiddo to soccer. And I had always thought that she was the grandmother. And just because I've seen him, you know, move, you know, get out of the car in the house, whatever, the neighbors, right? Neighborhood stuff. And I said, oh, so you bring your grandson to soccer? No, no, no. It's the same thing that happened when I reached out to a lady who I thought was pregnant. Yeah, she goes, I am his mom. I guess we're not going to be that friendly in the neighborhood anymore. But one of the conversations I had that struck me, and it's still with me to this day, is I had a conversation with a man on the sideline, a man as a dad, and he was talking to me about his life, and he found out that I was a pastor. And that usually changes the conversation. They try to not swear so much and whatever else, and they apologize for lots of things. That's why I tell people, when they ask me what I do, I say I'm in HR, because no one wants to talk about HR. But he found out I was a pastor, and he started telling me, he goes, Pastor, you know, I've done really well financially in my life. Business is great. I don't even have to work. I've got so many things going on. And he said, a number of years ago, I was at my church, and I heard the pastor talk about sacrifice and what would it mean to sacrifice. And that message hit him really hard. So hard that he started working even harder so that he could earn more so that he could give it all away. His whole purpose in his life at that point in time was give it all away. Hundreds and hundreds of kids all over the globe. He started different ministries, education ministries and things like that, health. And he was changing the lives of hundreds and hundreds of kids. And he's telling me this story, and I'm thinking, man, that's amazing. And I'm also thinking, how can I get you to Prince of Peace? We have a capital campaign. And then he tells me at the end, he looks at me and he probably says the most honest thing anybody's ever said to me. He said, I'm doing all this good. I know I'm doing all this good. I'm giving all this away. Changing lives, saving kids from death. He goes, but man, I miss my toys. One of the most human things I've ever heard. Here's a guy that's given everything away and changing the world, literally changing the world. But he still has that piece of him that's like, man, I miss all my toys. Because he had a lot of toys and he sold all of his toys. And he pointed out his car in the parking lot. It looked worse than mine. Sacrifice. That's what sacrifice looks like. But yeah, we miss our toys. My dad retired from the Air Force, Colonel Dean, and I always wondered about why didn't he become General Dean? I mean, Colonel Dean sounds great. I mean, that's cool. But I'm like, General Dean sounds even better. And my dad was a general. And I asked him one day, I said, Dad, I said, why didn't you go for the general rank? And he said, well, son, he came out of Vietnam and lots of people were getting promoted. And he said, in order for me to do that, I would have to take all of our family overseas, and I don't know how long we would have been over there. And he goes, I didn't want to do that to you guys. Sacrifice. My dad could have done it, but he sacrificed for his family. The bling and the toys of being a general were right out there for him. But he decided, I'm not going to go for that. I'm going to take care of my family. There are lots of stories of sacrifice, and I bet you if we had a piece of paper, gave you all a pen, you'd be able to write down sacrifices that you've had to make or sacrifices that have been made on your behalf. What we read in the book of Ruth, it starts out smelling really bad. This book, there's something's wrong going on here. Something is not going well. Naomi should never be alone. Naomi should have had a benefactor. Naomi should have had somebody take care of her after her husband died. That was the way the process worked. That was the way the culture worked. It's a little bit weird for us in our day, but the next person in line should have taken Naomi and married her and taken care of her and taken care of Ruth. That's the way it's supposed to be. That's the way God put it in Scripture. But something's really off, because that's not happening in the story until now. We get to the part of the story of Ruth where Boaz, by the way, if you're thinking about having a kid, call him Boaz. Or her, Boaz. It doesn't matter. It's a cool name. My name's Boaz. Boaz comes forward. He's not the next in kin. He's pretty far down the line. He comes forward and he confronts the next in kin and says, you have to do your duty. You have to do what's right. And did you hear what the next in line said that Kathy read? What was the excuse? Anybody? It would affect his inheritance. It would mess with his toys. If he carried Naomi and Ruth in his household, he would have to give up his toys. But that's what the scripture calls him to do. And Boaz comes along and says, well, if no one else is going to redeem this situation, I am. And Boaz redeems it. Boaz does his duty, and everything changes. Well, fast forward generations, and Jesus is sitting with his disciples on his last time with them before he leaves, and he's sitting with Peter, and he says, Peter, do you love me? And Peter says, well, of course I love you. No, Peter, do you love me? And Peter's like, yeah. I do love you. Jesus says, Peter, do you love me? Because if you love me, you're going to take care of my people. If you love me, you're going to continue this movement, no matter how hard it is going to be. Because Jesus is saying to Peter, you know what? Yeah, Boaz did what he did out of a sense of duty. What I want you to do this is that a sense of love? Love. When you have to sacrifice for something or somebody out of a sense of duty, it doesn't really hit hard in our lives. But we're willing to sacrifice all kinds of things for the people we love. I could never, ever, ever imagined the amount of sacrifice that I have made and I will continue to make joyfully for my kids. I never imagined that 24 years ago before my first son was born. My son was born. I never imagined what that was going to look like. I couldn't figure it out. I hadn't gone through it. But I do it joyfully. Ordering tires from Walmart in Decorah, Iowa, just to get my daughter new tires on the car. Like, you guys do that stuff, right? I mean, usually dads do that stuff, but moms do it too. The sacrifice out of love makes us do all kinds of things. And that's what Jesus is calling Peter into. Peter had just denied him three times. Jesus had been arrested. And someone said, hey, look at that guy. That guy knows Jesus. And Peter's like, nope, I don't know Jesus. Another person says, hey, that guy knows Jesus. And Peter says, I don't know Jesus. And a third time, someone says, I know that guy is hanging out with Jesus. No, I don't know Jesus. So when Jesus is asking Peter, it's that three question series. Do you know me? Do you love me? And if you do this, if you do love me, you will make the sacrifices that you need to make in order to tend to my sheep, to tend to my flock. That's what sacrifice is all about. We get sacrifice. We know that there's those who have sacrificed on our behalf. We know that we've sacrificed ourselves for others. And as we move into this kind of this later phase of our capital campaign, we're asking for a sacrifice. We're asking for a sacrificial gift. A gift that only you can give, a gift that will not be the same as everybody else's gift, but a gift that you can give in order so that we can continue to say, when Jesus asks this congregation, do you love me? We can say, yes, we do. And to get a little more information about that, let's watch this video. Open. That we'd be open to new possibilities.
Each year, our mortgage obligation is about $200,000. Half of that comes from the operating account. And if we are able to pay off our debt, that frees up $100,000 that we can use for new mission and ministry. In 2013, the church completed its No Debt, No Mission capital campaign. This released us from $4.5 million of debt, and the congregation had a celebration right here in the sanctuary. In 2017, the church launched into the One Church campaign. This was designed as a three-phase campaign to achieve the following. In phase one, the Christian Life Center was sold. The proceeds partially offset the new construction debt for the build-out of the freshly renovated worship center space. An additional 25,000 square feet of space was added to house programming spaces and offices for staff. In phase two, known as the Get It Done campaign, we finished the build-out of Mission Outpost space and the chapel. The planned third phase, Preserve Open Plant, seeks to pay off our remaining debt and to replace the aging roof and HVAC system.
Just creates an opportunity for bigger picture thinking and for us to focus on other initiatives.
So one of the unique opportunities we have with this capital campaign is that we are giving a 5% contribution of all proceeds from the capital campaign to five different projects. First one is scholarships for kids to go on mission trips. The second one is furniture ministry storage facility, brand new. Third thing will be supporting the dental clinic and the eye clinic. Fourth thing is supporting our Ilambo partnership in Tanzania. And our fifth thing is for our long-term partnership for Dulos Discovery School in the Dominican Republic.
So that we can spread the message of Prince of Peace and Jesus' faith throughout.
Well, one of the reasons why I wanted to get super detailed with all of this is because when Keenan and I started here 2 years ago, of course, we didn't have a lot of the history behind all these other capital campaigns. But when we started sharing with people that we still had debt, some people were very surprised. And actually, they got a little bit frustrated. And they looked at us like, well, can we trust you to tell us the truth? And I'm saying, yeah, you can. Because everything is in black and white. This is God's church. This is the church that we have, and we're gathered here. But some people thought that we were debt free, and I understand sometimes the messaging can get a little bit lost. In phase one, they were able to do what they needed to do to build this building out. Phase two, the mission outpost, and then phase three, which never happened, was going to help pay down the debt. And so actually we're kind of in a phase three right now of that campaign. So